We're going to talk about food, of course, and we have with us once again this morning the food maven, Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Well, you know, if we can't talk about food on Thanksgiving week, when can we talk about it?
We can talk about it all the time.
it's my job to talk about food. Anyway, and to cook it. So along those lines, even though I told we go to my nephew for Thanksgiving, and it's in general a delight, except that last year I totally had to cook everything. And like my grandmother on holidays, I then totally collapsed for several days afterwards. Actually, my grandmother had several heart attacks after preparing for Rosh Hashanah or Passover.
Now, can I ask you a question?
She didn't do Thanksgiving. We did it at, in our house. Pardon me?
Can I ask you a question about when you were younger?
Uh-huh.
When I was younger, my grandmother and her sisters, her three other sisters, would all, because we'd have big family functions with like 100 people there, they'd all cook in the same kitchen, and the fights that they had were amazing. Did that ever happen between when you saw?
No, because my grandmother was a boss.
Okay.
My grandmother was totally in charge. My mother totally obeyed. My aunts, one of them didn't show up until we were ready to eat, and the other, who we celebrated holidays with, it was very helpful. But my grandmother was the total boss, so it was like that. But I have to say, I've been among families that are like yours, notably many years ago. It's got to be 20 something years ago. I was having lunch at the home of an Italian-American friend's cousins in Italy, if that makes sense. So I'm in this remote town in the south of Italy, and the whole family, several generations, live in the same palazzo. It's not a palace, it's an apartment building. But it was a major building in this small town, and there were three or four families of the family in the building. So the women who cooked all got together to cook me this feast of local dishes, and they ranged in age from graduate students who spoke perfect English in other places, not from that town. One was, I remember, studying in Barcelona, and I don't remember where the other one was studying, and up to grandma. So they all learned the same recipes from grandma, yet every dish they all cooked this together in the same kitchen, pretty much. And they all argued. When I would say, well, how did you make this? They all had conflicting stories. Finally, we get to coffee at the end of the meal, and one of the young members of the family who was sitting next to me, because she spoke English, said to me, don't ask about the coffee. They'll argue over that, too. we did not argue. We go to my nephew. The only issue is I was totally wiped out for 2 days last year after cooking. And this year we're cooking for 15. We have 5 children and 10 adults. So I told him I'm not doing everything this year. So I told him what I was willing to do. And then he said, but you won't help me with the other things? I said, I'll peel potatoes. And there are going to be a lot of potatoes to peel. One great thing about this group is, besides that they're mostly sophisticated eaters and will eat sort of anything, is there are nobody who's gluten-free, nobody who's vegan, vegetarian, nobody who has any food issue. Except for the children, of course. They always have food issues. But try to get 10 adults together who will eat anything. So, since they're not carb-phobic either, we have 3 potatoes going. Some of us wanted Brian's now-famous potato gratin, so he's making that. Somebody else wanted mashed potatoes, so we're getting that. To get the kids to eat sweet potatoes, I suppose, I know Brian's going to puree the sweet potatoes, but he's considering giving in and putting marshmallows on top. I mean, he enjoyed that when he was a kid. Why shouldn't his kids enjoy that? And their friends. By the way, the 5 children are all friends, so that's nice. So that's at least, 3 potatoes? Then we have 2 stuffings going. Now, I'm in charge of stuffing. Last year, I bought a bag of croutons from the bakery that I, and they were whole wheat croutons that I normally buy my whole wheat bread from. I thought, well, you know, why should I bother doing this myself? Stale, make the bread stale and cut it into cubes when they do it for me. But I realized at the end, I don't really love whole wheat bread stuffing. Something, you know, it was too whole wheaty. I needed to, stuffing should have some nostalgic quality to it, and we certainly never had whole wheat bread stuffing when I was a kid.
Come on.
So I bought another good bakery's bag of croutons, actually two big bags, and my classic bread stuffing is nothing but a lot of celery, a lot of onions, sautéed in a lot of butter until they're all tender. Mix it in with the bread cubes, and I put a lot of sage in my in with the onions and celery and the butter, because the butter absorbs the flavor of sage too and distributes it throughout the whole thing. And then I leave the leaves in too. When I was gardening and always had sage on hand, I would dry sage at the end of the season to make sure that I had sage for my Thanksgiving stuffing, but I don't have a sage bush outside anymore, so I'm going to use fresh sage, which you can buy in the supermarket these days. So that's it. I mean, that's my classic. Oh, and then, of course, we don't put it in the turkey. We put it in a casserole, and I put broth over the top for every, let's say, five cups of cubes, of bread cubes. You're going to need at least 2 cups of chicken broth. In this case, I don't use my precious homemade chicken broth. I actually go out and buy a box or two of chicken broth. And you may, in fact, have to supplement your broth from the turkey to make gravy, and you can use that. So the other big request was from my nephew, who loves spicy food. In fact, I remember one Thanksgiving I made curried vegetables because he loves curry. It was a really complicated thing to make. I have the recipe here somewhere. I keep saying, I'm going to make that again. You know, I can eat that with rice and be happy. But he wanted a cornbread and chorizo stuffing. So I made up a recipe, but I've got to say, there are a zillion million cornbread and chorizo dressing / stuffing recipes on the internet. I looked. None of them in particular appealed to me, because I had a fixed idea about this, which maybe I shouldn't have, but it turned out pretty good. I did a test run yesterday. By the way, I made my own cornbread, and I'll give you the cornbread recipe in a sec, but if you buy cornbread, it's going to have sugar in it. It's unquestionable. I've yet to find a commercial cornbread or even a bakery cornbread that wasn't too sweet for me, or too sweet for this particular purpose. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I thought I heard you chip in. Anyway, so I made my own cornbread, and you got to do that at least a couple days ahead. As soon as I get off the phone with you, off the radio with you, I should say, I'm gonna make my cornbread. Yesterday, I had a few slices of bacon in the fridge, so I cooked them off, we ate it, but I saved the bacon. I did it intentionally to get the bacon fat. So this time I'm going to make the cornbread with some bacon fat. I used vegetable oil the first go-round, and that was fine. But I can see where the bacon fat would enhance this ever so slightly better. So let's start off with the cornbread. And it's a really easy, basic cornbread recipe. Calls for 1.5 cups of cornmeal. Now, I like yellow cornmeal for a Mexican sort of style cornbread stuffing, but if you want to use white, there's no reason you can't. So 1.5 cups of yellow cornmeal and 1/2 cup of flour. That calls for 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, and the reason we put baking soda in is because the liquid in this recipe is buttermilk, and you need something alkaline, like baking soda, to counteract the acidity of the buttermilk, and it gives a little lift to the bread too. It's a leavening when the two react, the soda and the buttermilk. So the dry and salt, and a teaspoon of salt. So the dry ingredients again are 1.5 cups of cornmeal. This is a great recipe. I've made it a zillion million times. When you want an unsweetened, sort of really sturdy cornbread, this is it. And by the way, it's tender and wonderful when hot, but once it dries, it's got wonderful crisp edges, I gotta say. Anyway, 1.5 cups of cornmeal, 1/2 cup of all-purpose flour, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of salt. I used a rounded teaspoon of salt. And then those are the dry ingredients. You sort of, you know, whisk them all together. And then in another bowl, you'll mix the liquid ingredients, which is 1¾ cups of buttermilk and 1 large egg, and whisk those together. And prepare your pan. I use a 9-inch black iron skillet. It's perfect. And if you only have a 10-inch, go ahead. And for this purpose, it's okay. But you're going to end up with a thinner and slightly drier bread, and that's okay for making stuffing. But if you're eating it for its own sake, I suggest a 9-inch pan. And what I did the first time was I put the pan, my skillet, in the oven with a couple tablespoons of oil. And when it got nice and hot is when I poured the batter in, but I swirled the oil around in the pan before pouring in the batter. The batter is just those liquid ingredients mixed with the dry ingredients. Don't overmix it, you know, just until it's all moistened, and it's never going to be smooth. It's cornmeal. But today I'm going to use 2 tablespoons of bacon fat that I happen to have in that pan. And it bakes at 400 degrees for half an hour. I found the half an hour was perfect, but I remember I had a preheated black iron skillet, and if you don't preheat the pan, it's probably going to take another 5 minutes. So that's your cornbread. When it's cooled, dump it out of the pan, put it on a rack, and let it sit there for at least 24 hours. Then you can cut it up into cubes, and if it's still very moist, lay it out on a baking sheet and let it dry out a little more. I let mine dried out almost 2 days. So I'm going to make it this morning, and I'm not going to make the stuffing until Wednesday morning, so there's your 2 days of drying out the cornbread. The recipe itself, I mean, to make the stuffing is super easy. I sautéed 1.5 cups of chopped onion, actually 1/4-inch diced onion, and 1/2 cup, well, maybe it was more like 3/4 cup of diced red pepper, sweet red pepper. It was 1/2 large red pepper, and, you know, no ribs, and then you just cut it into strips and then cut across and make dice. And 1 jalapeno, which I also took the ribs and the seeds out so it wasn't incendiary, and I minced that. And so that's my vegetable ingredients. But here's an essential ingredient, the chorizo. It says cornbread chorizo stuffing, and I'm not an expert on chorizo. So I go to my local, I have a local, Mexican grocery, and they had 3 different brands of Mexican chorizo. I thought it's overkill for me to buy all 3, so I've only bought 2. I bought the 2 that were the softest, because my intention is to take the, or was and it is, the intention of taking it out of the casing and sautéing it in I just used a dry nonstick pan, but even a not nonstick is fine, because the sausage will render some fat. Now, I've cooked both of these, and one of them, a very soft sausage, crumbled very nicely, but had gristle, bits of gristle in it, or even bone, that made it rather unpleasant. I had to pick that out before I mixed it in with my bread cubes. And the other one was more like an emulsified sausage. So even though I took it out of the casings, it kept its shape, and I had to dice it in order to cut it up. But that was okay. My housekeeper comes on Friday, and she sees what I bought, and she says, "Oh, you should have told me." She's Mexican. She said, "You should have told me. I would have brought you the good stuff." She said, "I don't like this brand," and she pointed to the one that crumbled easily but had bone and gristle in it. And I don't know the other brand. So I don't know what to say. I mean, you could make your own chorizo sausage. It's very easy. But, you know, it's just ground pork with seasonings. And it is spicy. And the one that was more emulsified actually had bits of jalapeno in it. And on the label, had the word jalapeno was enormous. They were both quite spicy, but neither of them, you know, too spicy, even for Mr. Bob, who doesn't like spicy. So I was 2 links of chorizo sausage, and I cooked it until it was, you know, it's already, you know, until it lost its raw color, so to speak, until it sort of started to brown and rendered a little bit of fat. I took that out of the pan, and then I added a little bit of vegetable oil and sautéed the onion, the red pepper, and the jalapeno. It took about 6 or 8 minutes until the onion was tender. I really didn't want the red pepper to be totally, totally soft, so I started the onion and let it go 2 or 3 minutes, and then I added the red pepper and the jalapeno, and put all of this in a bowl. First the meat, as it got cooked, and the bread cubes. And I tossed the meat and the bread cubes together, and whatever fat rendered out of the bread cubes. Remember, this bread has no fat in it at all. And then I sautéed the onion, red pepper, and jalapeno. And I scraped all of that into the pan and tossed it all again. I did add some salt and freshly ground black pepper to my vegetables after they got tender, but just to mix it all in together. Now, I'm considering, when I make this on Wednesday, also adding in some kernels of corn, frozen corn, and I would think a half a cup or so is enough. It'll add a little touch of sweet to what is a very savory and not so spicy, but spicy enough mixture. And what I discovered is that although 2 cups of broth for what I had was 5 cups of bread cubes was a good amount, in the case of cornbread, where there's very, very little gluten, whereas, you know, in regular bread is full of gluten, and gluten makes things stick together, I found that it was a little too, let's say, loose for me. It was quite moist, but it didn't hold together the way I really wanted it to. So I experimented, and what I'm going to do on Wednesday is, after this experiment was successful, is I'm going to add 2 eggs to my 2 cups of chicken broth, beat them into the chicken broth until well mixed, and pour that over the bread. And then it goes in the oven for, I would say, 40 minutes is a good time. I put it in a 13-by-9-inch casserole. If you don't have one of those, everybody has one of those. Everybody's got a 13-by-9. It's the standard, you know, Pyrex size. But I have other materials in that size, so it's a handy size. If you don't have one, though, a deeper casserole will be good, too. You're going to end up with, you need to have at least, I think, a 6-cup casserole, at least. So that's it. That's the whole thing. That's going to be our spicy stuffing. Before I stick it in the oven, I'm going to ask the spicy one, Brian, if it's spicy enough, and if it's not, I can always dice in an extra jalapeno. And what else was I considering? Oh, I know. I was considering putting in some chopped cilantro or coriander. But, you know, I didn't poll the audience to see if they like or don't like. So I may have some on hand in case they like. I'll figure it out on Wednesday. But you could always, if you love coriander, you can always put in some chopped coriander. It's very pretty as it is because made with yellow cornmeal, and you have red diced sweet pepper and diced green jalapeno. It's a very festive looking casserole of stuffing. And you could stuff that in the turkey if you really want it.
Sounds good. Does it need the extra? Does it? I said it sounds.
Well, it was good enough that Bob ate it for lunch and dinner.
That's a good, and that's a good tester.
That is, because he doesn't usually like spicy, but he did like this. So I'm also in charge of the cranberry sauce, which is easy. Combine canned cranberry sauce. I don't know. No Thanksgiving can go by without at least one can of gelled cranberry sauce on the table, I think.
Do you cut it?
But I'm also going to make a whole cranberry sauce, which is nothing to do. You just empty out the 12-ounce package of cranberries into a pot, and you add water and sugar. I don't know, a cup of sugar is usually enough, but I think the package might actually call for more. If you make it, I do this totally classic, just with water, but you could use orange juice instead of water, and that makes a nice cranberry sauce. Also, you could, to jazz it up a little bit, you could put in some... Oh, by the way, so you have to let the cranberries boil until they pop, because only when they pop do they release pectin, which will in the end thicken up your what starts out as a pretty loose mixture, but it'll be quite thick in the end, especially, you know, let it chill for a day. And I think cranberry, believe it or not, I think cranberry sauce tastes better the second day. So that's how you can make it today for Thursday is okay. That's the thing to get out of the way as soon as you can. And I used to actually put orange segments into the cranberry sauce, but not necessary. I think everybody likes your a classic cranberry sauce. You know, I've made raw cranberry. I mean, there are a million cranberry sauce recipes out there, but nothing is better to me than the traditional.
No,
it's on your Thanksgiving tables.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a child of the 50s, so I really like the jelly. The smooth cranberry.
And I've always...
No. I love the I think even if you're a child in the 70s or 80s or 90s,
the 2000s. What you said earlier is so true. Getting 10 adults together who will just eat is such a bonus these days.
Isn't it?
It's just extraordinary. A friend in Florida basically said, hey, I can't do this because I've got X number of people. One's got an impacted wisdom tooth. One's got IBS. One is gluten-free.
Let me just say, I don't know if any of us know each other well enough to admit to IBS, but that may be. But in so far, I have not been given any rules to follow. And Brian was surprised, I have to say. I think he did ask his friends. We have three young families, plus the elders, it's me and Bob and my sister. So he did ask them. And then he didn't think we were going to need so much stuffing. He said, oh, everybody's number one dish was stuffing. So I bet I make good stuffing.
Better.
Yeah, no, you know, listen, enough butter, sautéed onion, celery makes any bread stuffing. And also, I usually will take some of the fat from the roasting pan, the turkey roasting pan, and also, if I have enough turkey broth, to put some turkey broth on instead of boxed or canned chicken broth. It makes it so much better. It makes it almost like he was cooked inside the turkey. So, I do doll it up in that respect.
I don't know.
Like some good turkey fat on your stuffing.
Oh, yeah. You've got to.
Yeah, so we have, what do we have, like 6 carb dishes? We do have a lot of vegetables as well,
right.
I've got to say. Remember, I think last week I mentioned I'm making Brussels sprouts, because the kids, believe it or not, these 5 kids love Brussels sprouts. And I know somebody is bringing a string bean casserole, but nobody's told me if it's the classic with the cream of mushroom soup or what. And we have other vegetables, too. Who remembers? I think, actually, hardly anybody eats vegetables.
I know. We're
they're on the table just because they're supposed
for color combination. Well, I know, you know, we've got serious Brussels sprouts eaters. I know that one.
Ooh, Brussels sprouts.
No, I know, not for me. I like salad.
Seeing that Brussels sprouts on the stalk are sort of everywhere this year.
Okay.
I mean, they used to be somewhere, but now they're everywhere. And somebody the other day told me, "Oh, I like to microwave them right on the stalk."
Ugh. Why?
And I'm looking at these stalks in the market. How do you fit them in a microwave? You got to cut it up, and then you lose the whole effect. And also, if you look at those stalks, you'll find that the sizes of the Brussels sprouts vary dramatically from the top of the stalk to the bottom of the stalk. So cooking those all at the same temperature at the same time is not possible. In fact, some of the stalks I saw the other day, the top Brussels sprout was the size of a small cabbage, which it is, after all.
Right. And then the junior Brussels sprout.
But we don't want a softball-sized Brussels sprout.
Yeah, it's really amazing how these food fads, for lack of a better word, begin. Without as much foundation and common sense as you might like. So you get a
Let's say this. Nobody knew, not nobody, but very few consumers, eaters, knew that Brussels sprouts grew that way. And once we saw that from farmers' markets, where they sold them, of course, less labor to harvest, they sold these whole stalks in the farmers' market, to people say, "Oh, isn't that a lot of fun? They grow on a stalk like that. I don't want to take them off the stalk."
Isn't that right?
I'm going to go buy a stalk because I'm curious how the stalk tastes.
Yeah, but then
you can peel it and slice it.
Exactly, and
it'll be
as
delicious as broccoli stems, which I love.
Right. No, I'm sure it would be, but you can't just throw the whole thing in and hope for the best. Is
well, I don't know. Whoever told me this the other day seems to think that he or she was successful with this. But you can see, I don't even remember who told me.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, dismissed it at first as something I wouldn't do.
It's a size thing.
Anyway, I guess you could roast the whole stalk.
Sure. You could.
Yeah, and balance it in my oven.
Right, and you know, you throw that in a roasting pan with some good olive oil and some salt, and I'm sure it'll be delicious.
What isn't delicious with olive oil?
Nothing.
And salt?
Nothing.
Good olive oil and salt.
I've told this story 1,000 times.
I went to a restaurant the other day. It's not my first time there, but it's just a neighborhood place. But the food is really, you know, I don't usually recommend an Italian restaurant. But the young couple that owned this place used only the absolute best ingredients. And what made me think of this is they use extraordinary olive oil. And I ordered some broccoli rabe, which of course was sautéed in some of that great oil, but it also came with some toasted bread doused ever so slightly with that olive oil, and I couldn't stop eating it. So anyway, it's called Flora, F-L-O-R-A, and it's a cafe, very casual, but with wonderful Southern Italian food. And it's on the corner of 8th Avenue and 11th Street here in Park Slope. They're only open for dinner Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. Otherwise, it's open for lunch and brunch. And I've done both lunch and dinner. And there is something on both menus that I could highly recommend, which is the breaded fried pork chop. I mean, it really is a sensational breaded fried pork chop. Comes with some salad. But they have very, very good pastas. And the couple is from a place called Cilento, which is where my cooking school used to be. And Pestum is at the edge of Cilento. It's a mountainous area in the southern part of Campania, bordering Calabria. And anyway, moving on, I think it's time for me to say, everybody, have a great Thanksgiving. Better get that turkey defrosted if you bought a frozen one. Start today.
Start now. Starting
right now. Take it out. Put it in the refrigerator. Unless it's 20 pounds and you don't have enough time between now and Thursday, you'll have to leave it out at room temperature for 12 hours.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Don't Don't eat too much, but eat enough.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Eat hearty, as my grandfather would say.
All right. Eat hearty. Eat well.
Eat hearty. All right. Ciao.